This is Case Closed, your hour of mystery from the Golden Age of Radio, every Wednesday at RelicRadio.com. A quick note before we hear our stories today. You may have noticed past episodes of this podcast and all of the others have not been available since late last week. The service is down that hosts those files, though it will be back up sooner or later. In the meantime, new episodes are still being posted, and new episodes are now available on Spotify as well. Just click on one of the links in the show notes to visit that, or search for Relic Radio Network on Spotify. Someone else is using the Relic Radio name. I have nothing to do with anything other than the podcasts, just so you know. Hopefully those shows are back up soon, but for this week, we're going to start with Matthew Slade, Private Investigator, and hear Pattern for a Frame from October 11th, 1964. After that, it's a case for Dr. Morell and the Blackmailer. That story aired May 21st, 1957.
From Hollywood, welcome to Starlight Mystery Theater and another episode in the series Matthew Slade, Private Investigator. We invite you to take your seat as Matthew Slade unfolds Pattern for a Frame.
In my job, the hours are odd. So are the circumstances and the people I meet. You could even call some of them dangerous. My calling card reads, Matthew Slade, Private Investigator. I was in my office sipping a freshly brewed cup of coffee, thinking about my car being serviced at Max's garage. I hoped he'd have it ready for me tonight. Yes, Jonesy?
Max's garage called and said your car would be ready by 5. And Max, there's a Mr. Beneath here to see you. There are two gentlemen with him.
Beneath? He's the last person I want to see. All right, send him in.
Mr. Slade?
Yeah, come in. But tell your two associates to wait outside.
Wait for me.
Yeah, now what's on your mind?
Congressman Wakefield and your association with him.
I don't discuss a client's business with outsiders.
I don't consider myself an outsider. I'm well aware of the congressman's crusading instincts and what he's attempting to do. He's made some strong accusations which have been quite embarrassing to me. After all, I do have a position to maintain in this community.
Look, let's not play games, Venice. I'm well aware of your background.
I'm a respected businessman.
That's the image you've carefully built. But underneath that facade, there's something quite different.
I've been a patient up to now. But I want you to know, and you can tell the congressman, that if these accusations continue, I'll slap a slander suit against him and anyone else who takes his position.
Look, why do you come to me? Why don't you tell this to Wakefield?
My attorneys have been in contact with him, but he's a very stubborn man, as well as being a foolish. I thought you might be more sensible.
Mm-hmm. You want me to pull the congressman off your back, right?
Exactly.
You're wasting your time.
Then you intend to continue your course of action?
That's right.
It could prove to be a very disastrous mistake.
Another threat? Maybe something stronger than just a slander suit?
You're no child playing adult games, Mr. Slade. I'm sure you know what's at stake.
Yeah. Enough to make me curious to know all there is to know.
That's extremely distressing. I was counting on a more receptive attitude.
Sorry to disappoint you. Now, if you'll excuse me.
I can assure you, this is not the end.
Mm-hmm. Well, as they say, see you in court.
That could be a very prophetic statement, Mr. Slade. Remember, you've been warned.
Frank Finis, the man responsible for most of the gambling, narcotics, and prostitution in the city. He was running scared. I left the office at 5:30, walked to Max's garage, picked up my car, and drove home. I was finishing a very nice, tender, barbecued steak when... Hello?
I have some very interesting information for you about Frank Finis.
Who is this?
The name is not important. What I have to tell you is, it may be all you need to expose him. I have to see you. Tonight, my life is in great danger.
And you come here?
Meet me at 472 Quincy Street, apartment 25.
What time?
8:30. And tell no one, or the information I have may die with me.
472 Quincy Street was in a deserted section of town. The slum area, where apartments were being torn down in a redevelopment program. There were no lights, no one around. I climbed the broken staircase to apartment 25, cautiously pushed the door open with my foot, then entered the darkened room. Hello? Hello? Anyone here? There was no answer. Only the stillness. The stillness which was broken by what sounded like heavy breathing. Who's there? When I regained consciousness, I found myself bound tightly. It took nearly an hour before I managed to free myself. It was shortly after 10 when I arrived back at my apartment. I showered, changed clothes, and relaxed with a good stiff drink, and tried reasoning out what had gone before. Naturally, Frank Venice was my first candidate. It had to be one of his muscle men who worked me over, and he had evidently gotten to that mysterious caller before me. What I couldn't figure out was why had I been tied up? Didn't seem to serve any purpose. My contemplation was interrupted by the door above me. Well, well, if it isn't Sergeant Dinelli and the intrepid Lieutenant Flagg.
I'd like a word with you, Flagg.
Of course. Come on in. Sit down over there. You're looking rather glum, Sid. What's wrong?
You mind if we ask the question?
Look, what is this? You come in here for a friendly visit, and right away you have to start acting tough.
This isn't a friendly visit. It's business. Police business.
You two sound serious.
Murder is serious.
Murder? What murder?
Congressman Wakefield was found tonight with two bullets in him.
What? He was shot to death just a few hours ago, Matt.
You've been in all night, Slade?
No, I haven't. Well, what's that got to do with anything?
Now, play it straight, Matt. Take a friend's advice.
You trying to say I know something about this?
You trying to say you don't?
Yes, I am, and I get the feeling you don't believe me.
We'll decide that later. What time did you go out tonight?
It was about 7:45.
And where did you go?
You see, I received a phone call about 7:30. The caller asked me to meet her in an apartment on Quincy Street. When I got there, the place was deserted, or so I thought. Then someone jumped me. When I came to, I was tied up. Took me about an hour to get free, and then I came back here. That was about 10:30.
Take a look at this gun, Matt. Can you identify it?
Yeah, the one I keep in my office. How'd you get a hold of it?
We found it in Wakefield's driveway. That's the gun that was used on him. We already checked it. The only prints we found on it were yours.
So you think I killed him?
It looks that way.
Yeah, now it's all very clear. The call, being blackjacked and tied up. I wasn't supposed to be able to account for my time tonight. Look, isn't it obvious to you two I'm being set up for a frame?
You surprised me, Slade. I figured you'd have come up with a better story than that.
Now, well, it may sound contrived, but it happens to be true.
I'd like to believe that.
You two really think I killed Wakefield, don't you? Look, I was working with him. You both know we've been after Frank Venice. Why would I want to kill him?
We've got that, too. Enlighten your friend, Sergeant.
We've got an eyewitness. She swears she saw you shoot him.
Well, whoever she is, she's lying.
She claims to be Wakefield's girlfriend. Said you and she were together tonight. But Wakefield came in unexpectedly. There was a fight, and you shot him.
Oh, come on, Sid.
There's the gun, Slade, and the fact that you can't satisfactorily account for your time between the hours of 8 and 10. That's when the coroner established time of death. You want to tell us the truth now?
You've already heard it.
Okay. Get your coat. We're booking you for murder.
It was a short drive to police headquarters. They put me through the routine booking procedures, something I'd witnessed dozens of times but never expected to be a part of. I was taken to a cell where I waited for my attorney, Dan Brody.
Matt, I can't believe you.
Well, you're not the only one, Dan. Thanks for coming.
Flagg's really gone overboard this time.
It's not just Flagg. The evidence is rather overwhelming.
Yes, and it reeks to high heaven of frame-up.
Well, with the fact they've got the truth spells me out as a murderer.
Then we'll have to start building the kind of case that'll blast a big hole in their facts.
All right. Where do we start?
Your office tomorrow morning. There might be some clue as to how they got hold of your gun. Oh, Matt, cheer up. By the time I'm finished, the DA's office will have to drop this case.
Yeah.
Morning, Miss Jones.
Mr. Brody, I've been expecting you.
You find anything yet?
Nothing. There doesn't seem to be any indication that the office was broken into last night.
Are you positive?
Maybe you should look, too. I may have overlooked something.
All right, let's start with this door. It's the only one leading into the hall, isn't it?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. It doesn't look as though this lock has been tampered with. Where did Matt keep his gun?
In his desk drawer.
A lock?
No, but his office door is always kept locked after he leaves.
I see. Were you able to talk to the night janitor?
Yes. Lucas said he led a strange man out of the building just before 7. This description matched one of the men who was here with Frank Venice. That should be a big help.
Maybe. But the fact that he was seen in the building isn't enough. You have to prove he entered his office. And a lot depends on how closely we can tie Venice into all this.
How bad does it look for Matt?
Well, what evidence the police have is fairly conclusive. Maybe it's too conclusive.
What do you mean by that?
Well, it's all so perfect, so clear-cut. It makes Matt look too obvious. I think Venice tried to play too pat a hand and may work in our favor.
And what will you do?
I'm not sure just yet. I have a meeting in an hour with the assistant DA, Austin Briggs. Maybe something will come out of that. The only thing I am sure of is that Matt is not going to be convicted of murder. I'm going to find some way to get the truth.
Come in, Dan.
Morning, Austin.
You know Lieutenant Flagg, Sergeant Denelling?
Of course, gentlemen.
Okay. Sit down, Dan.
Thank you.
Cigar?
No, thank you. Seem to be in a very obliging spirit this morning, Austin.
I'm open to anything you care to discuss, but I should warn you, I'm not in a deal-making mood.
But I'll offer you a chance to save yourself considerable embarrassment in court.
Just how do you think I'll be embarrassed?
Trying for a conviction against my client.
Oh, you're very funny, Dan.
You think so?
Why don't you save everyone a lot of time and bother about pleading guilty? If you do, I won't push for the gas station.
Now you're being funny.
There's no question of Flagg's guilt.
Not even a reasonable doubt, Lieutenant.
Not as far as I'm concerned.
Oh, well, then I suppose I'll give all of you a good laugh when I say Matthews Slade is being framed by Frank Denise.
That was his story. It doesn't sound any more convincing coming from you.
Lieutenant Flagg supplied you with an excellent case, Dan.
Oh, come now. Austin, give credit where credit is due. Denise is the one you have to thank for that.
If you can prove that, fine. I have nothing against Slade personally. I'm merely acting the evidence given.
I dare say, Lieutenant, that you aren't quite as neutral as Austin here.
If you mean I'm not going to lose any sleep over Slade's predicament, you're right. He's a gun-happy, skirt-happy gumshoe who was bound to get into real trouble someday.
Barney, I've told you, you've got the wrong idea about Matt.
Look, Sergeant, I can't tell you who to pick for friends. Just don't presume to tell me I'm wrong about
Slade. That's an argument over, Sally, gentlemen.
I'm going to use all of this in court, Austin. Don't think for 1 minute I won't.
Use what?
Your arresting officer here is obviously prejudiced against my client.
And you're accusing me of rigging the evidence.
Oh, did you, Lieutenant?
Were you...
Barney, take it easy. Look, Counselor, the Lieutenant has a bug about private detectives.
It's not necessary to make excuses for me.
Okay, that's enough. Did you come in here for the purpose of stirring up something, Dan?
My only purpose in coming here was to tell you you're making a big mistake, Austin.
Really? Let's find that out in court.
Order in the court. Proceed, Mr. Briggs.
Now then, Lieutenant, tell the court what you found when you arrived at the proceedings house.
He was lying by the bedroom door with two bullet holes in his chest. He was holding the poker from the fireplace in his right hand.
Miss York, you saw the man who shot and killed Congressman Wakefield?
Yes, I did.
Do you see that man in this courtroom?
That's him, over there.
Let it be recorded that the witness indicated the defendant Matthew Slade. Now, Miss York, tell the court what your relationship was to the defendant.
We were friends.
I mean more specifically. You were more than just friends, isn't that true?
We were...
Lovers, Miss York?
Yes.
Now then, on the night in question, what transpired?
Mr. Slade and I were together that night at Clark's home.
I see. Please go on.
He came in and found us together.
And what was his reaction?
I'm sure he wouldn't have lost his temper if Mr. Slade hadn't baited him.
What do you mean, baited?
He laughed at Clark. Said he wasn't capable of keeping a woman.
Now, Miss York, please tell the court what happened after that.
Clark moved to the fireplace. Picked up the poker.
Did he make any move to strike the defendant?
No. He made a verbal threat. That's when Mr. Slade shot him.
And what did you do?
I was frightened. I thought he might shoot me, and then he ran from the room. That's when I phoned the police.
Thank you, Miss York.
Is there any redirect?
Yes, Your Honor. Miss York, did you phone the defendant that night and ask him to meet you?
Yes.
And isn't it true that you asked him to meet you in a deserted apartment on Quincy Street and not at the home of Congressman Wakefield?
No, that's not true.
Need I remind you that you're under oath, Miss York?
I'm well aware of that.
Well, I'm sure an attractive girl like you would find it rather stifling to have to spend time in prison on a perjury charge.
Objection and badgering the witness, Your Honor.
Sustained. You're a little out of line, Mr. Brody. Please confine the questions to testimony given in direct.
Very well, Your Honor. Now, Miss York, what time did you call the defendant?
Between 7 and 7:30.
And what time did he arrive?
8 o'clock.
He drove his own car?
Yes.
You're sure of that?
Yes.
If it please the court, at this time I'd like to enter some new evidence.
Mr. Briggs, the state has no objection, Your Honor.
I have here, sir, two reports. One shows that on the day of the Wakefield murder, my client's car was lubricated by Max's garage. Now, the mileage was recorded and indicates that at the time, there were 12,562 miles on the speedometer. I also have a report here, verified by the police, that the day after my client was taken into custody, his car speedometer indicated 12,581 miles. A difference of only 19 miles. Now, on the day of the murder, my client drove from Max's garage to his apartment, then to 472 Quincy Street, and then back again to his apartment. A distance of exactly 19 miles. If, on the other hand, my client had driven to Congressman Wakefield's home, as Miss York has testified, he would have had to travel an additional 8 miles. Therefore, I submit, Miss York has perjured herself.
Order in the court.
The state must oppose the introduction of this so-called evidence. Without meaning to demean the defense counsel, it is obvious that such evidence is inadmissible. Anyone who knows even the slightest about cars knows how easy it is to turn back a speedometer.
I take offense at that remark, Austin. You're saying I'm attempting to submit false evidence.
No, Dan, I'm only suggesting its validity is questionable.
Gentlemen, please, I'll have to take this evidence into consideration. Now I see it's approaching 12 o'clock. We'll adjourn for lunch. I caution the jury not to discuss this case or draw any conclusion until all the evidence is in. Court will reconvene at 1:30.
On that morning, Miss Jones, you stated that the defendant had a visitor.
Yes, actually three men came in.
Who were they?
Mr. Frank Venice and two of his associates. I don't know their names.
Why did Mr. Venice come to see Miss Slade?
He knew that Mr. Slade was working with Congressman Wakefield on compiling evidence that would link him with a crime syndicate. He tried to persuade Mr. Slade to call off an investigation.
Did he make any threats?
Nothing overt. Mr. Slade said that he was being persecuted. And if they continued, it could prove disastrous. He didn't elaborate.
I see. And then he left?
Yes.
Now, Miss Jones, the next day after the defendant was arrested, you received a call from a Mr. Max Cutler.
That's right.
What was the nature of that call?
Well, Max runs the garage where Mr. Slade has his car service. When he read about Mr. Slade's arrest, he called to tell me that he had noticed a man leaving Mr. Slade's car late the previous afternoon. His description matched that of one of the two men who accompanied Mr. Venice to the office.
Now, how could he have known the defendant's car was at Max's garage?
Well, Mr. Slade asked me to call Max's garage to find out when his car would be ready. I was asking him the information when the three men entered. We overheard the conversation.
What do you suppose one of these men was doing at the defendant's car?
He must have taken an impression of the office key.
Objection, Your Honor. The witness is drawing a conclusion.
Objection sustained. Strike that from the record. The jury will disregard it. Proceed, Mr. Brady.
Yes, Your Honor. Now, Miss Jones, tell the court what you learned from Lucas Haynes, the night janitor of your office building.
Lucas led a strange man out of the building after it was closed. Sometime before 7 o'clock.
The same man seen by Max Cutler at his garage?
Yes.
And the same man who came to your office with Frank Venise?
Yes.
Thank you, Miss Jones. The state may cross-examine.
Miss Jones, you're employed by the defendant, Matthew Slade.
Yes.
For how long?
Over 4 years.
And for those 4 years, you've been a loyal employee?
For years.
And these gentlemen, Max Cutler and Lucas Haynes, I would guess, they are friendly with the defendant?
Yes.
And what about you? Are they fond of you?
I think so.
Then would you mind telling me this story you just told? Was it your idea, the defendant, or the defense counselor?
Objection, Your Honor.
No further questions.
Order in the court. I won't tolerate this sort of outrage.
Your Honor, the prosecution is attempting to belittle the witness.
I'm well aware of what the prosecution is attempting to do. I must caution both counselors to try and remember their courtroom etiquette. Now you may call your next witness, Mr. Brody.
Yes, Your Honor. I call to the stand Frank Venice.
Everything Miss Jones said is untrue.
Is it, Mr. Venice?
Yes. Oh, it's true. I paid a call of Mr. Slade that morning, but not for the purpose you stated. I wanted to retain Mr. Slade's service.
Why would a prominent man about town like yourself want to hire a private detective?
Well, I do have enemies, Counselor. A man in my position will occasionally step on a few toes, however unintentional. Of late, my family and I have been plagued by anonymous phone calls threatening harm.
Really? Now, why would anyone want to do that to a first-class citizen in his family?
As I said, I do have enemies. As to who made the calls, well, that's the reason I wanted to hire Mr. Slade. To find out. The only reason I paid him that visit.
And what about this associate of yours who was seen by Max Cutler and Lucas Haynes?
I think the assistant district attorney has summed that up very neatly already. Besides, I have no associate or knowledge of anyone fitting the description he gave.
Now, tell the court, are you acquainted with Rito York?
No, I am not.
Come now, sir, isn't she on your payroll?
Of course not. You make many accusations, Mr. Brody. I trust you're ready to back them up.
The witness will refrain from addressing the defense counsel in that manner.
Must I sit here and allow him to...
I'll handle the discipline in this courtroom, Mr. Benny. Now then, Mr. Brody, do you intend following this line of interrogation?
No, Your Honor, I'm through with this witness.
Do you care to cross-examine, Mr. Brody?
No questions, Your Honor.
And does this conclude your case, Mr. Brody?
No, Your Honor. I'd like to request a 30-minute recess so I might discuss a vital point with my client.
Very well. We could use a cooling off period. Court is adjourned for 30 minutes.
Sit down, Matt. Where's Jonesy off to, Dan? I saw your widow, and she left the courtroom in a big hurry.
I'm going to try something, Matt. Not strictly ethical, and it could backfire, but I think it's worth a risk.
Well, what is it?
First, take off your coat and your shirt.
Do you mind explaining?
Okay. But no argument. Now, here's what I propose to do.
Are you ready to proceed, Mr. Brody?
Yes, Your Honor.
Very well. Call your witness.
Will Miss Rita York please take the stand?
Order in the court. I remind you, Miss York, you are still under oath.
Now, Miss York, I'd like to go back to something you said in your previous testimony. You stated that you and the defendant were together that night. Is that correct?
Yes.
I take it this is not the first time you both were together under such circumstances. Am I correct in assuming that?
We've spent many nights together.
Then you've had, shall we say, close relations with the defendant.
I don't know what you mean.
Oh, come now, Miss York. Surely we don't have to paint you a picture. How many nights have you spent with Mr. Slade?
Several. Well, I can't remember exactly.
Now, think, Miss York. 3, 4.
I told you there were many.
Then if I asked you something specific about the defendant, you'd be able to tell me, now, wouldn't you?
What do you mean?
What I mean, Miss York, is, can you tell the court if the defendant has any outstanding scars, moles, birthmarks, or tattoos on his body? Come on, Miss York. Surely you would have noticed something like that. Well? Your Honor, will you please instruct the witness to answer my question?
Miss York, you must answer.
No, I noticed nothing like that.
Would it please the court? I would like the defendant to remove his shirt.
Objection, Your Honor. Mr. Brody is attempting to turn these proceedings into some sort of science.
I'm attempting to establish the fact that this witness has perjured herself, Your Honor. I believe it to be a vital point.
I'm going to allow a wide latitude here, Mr. Briggs, in the interest of justice. You may remove your shirt, Mr. Slade.
As the court can plainly see, the defendant's chest is tattooed with the likeness of an eagle. Your Honor, I submit that the witness, Miss Rita York, could not possibly not have known about this if she had told the truth.
What do you have to say, Miss York?
I didn't want to get involved in this. You must believe that. He forced me to.
Who is he, Miss York?
Venice, Frank Venice. He killed Wakefield.
I don't know how to thank you, Dan.
Oh, save it. When you see my fee, you may feel different.
Whatever the price, it's worth it. You know, I'm very fond of my freedom.
Oh, by the way, you can wash off that indelible ink with a good, strong detergent.
Oh, I don't know. I just may keep it. How can anyone destroy such a masterpiece? You know, your forensic talents, Mr. Brody, are surpassed only by your tattooing artistry.
You say the nicest thing, Mr. Detective.
This is the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service.
There we are.
Thank you so much for bringing us home.
Not at all, Lady Ford. Hope you enjoyed the party.
Oh, my wife and I did very much, yes. Good night.
Good night, Sir Shepherd. Good night, Lady Ford.
Good night.
Most kind of you to give us a lift.
A pleasure.
That was a very nice party.
Yes. I didn't realize it was so late. It's 2 o'clock.
There was no light in Cynthia's room.
No, she'll have gone to bed hours ago.
Oh, I'm tired.
We're getting too old for these late nights. You go up to bed. I'll bring some hot milk.
Thank you, dear. A funny smell of gas.
Yes, it's gas, all right.
Someone must have left a gas tap on in the kitchen.
I'll go and see. Don't worry, dear. By Jove, there is a strong smell. Gosh, it's overpowering. Where's the switch? What the... Cynthia! Cynthia!
BBC presents A Case for Dr. Morell, another adventure by Ernest Dudley, with Cecil Parker as the famous Dr. Morell and Sheila Sim as his secretary, Miss Frail. The Blackmailer.
Sir Clifford Forbes, Inspector.
Oh, good morning, Sir Clifford. Thank you, Sergeant.
It's very good of you to see me, Inspector Hood.
Do you mind if I smoke my pipe?
Of course not.
Now, just begin wherever you like and see if we can help you.
Well, as you know, Inspector, my wife and I and our daughter live in Winchester. Our daughter, Cynthia, is barely 19. She's our only child. Well, last summer we took her to Spain. Cynthia met a Count Raymond Alvaro. They fell in love and became engaged to be married. He travels between Madrid and London frequently and has been to our home 2 or 3 times.
When do they propose to get married?
In the autumn.
I understand, sir.
About 2 weeks ago, Cynthia came to London to go to a rather special party with her fiancé. Since her return, she's been a completely different girl.
Different, Sir Clifford?
It was as if she was terrified of something. My wife and I got nowhere with her. And then a couple of nights ago, we'd been out to dinner. We came back and I found Cynthia with her head in the gas oven. I was just in time to save her. The next day, she tried to gas herself again. The doctor got her into a nursing home where she's under constant watch so that she can't do herself any harm. Of course, I realize, of course, an attempt to commit suicide is an offense.
Oh, no need to worry about that, Sir Clifford. It wouldn't be our job in a case like this to aggravate the situation. We'd want to try and help.
Thank you.
If we can. And that's the problem. Your object in coming to Scotland Yard is to see if we can find out what's at the back of your daughter's attempts on her own life.
My wife and I and the doctor have talked it over, and it's quite obvious Cynthia will never tell us what's wrong.
It would appear from what you say that it's linked up with this visit to London.
She was perfectly all right when she went, but he was a different person when she came back.
Well, I'm afraid, Sir Clifford, I don't see what action we can take.
But there must be something responsible for our daughter's state of mind.
But it isn't a police matter. So far as we're concerned, she's receiving proper care and attention in the nursing home. The danger of her taking her life is diminished. And when she recovers, she'll leave the nursing home and that'll be that.
But can't you investigate what's behind it all?
How could we? To start with, we should have to question your daughter, which, if she let us do so, might only succeed in aggravating her condition without achieving any results.
I see.
Sir Clifford, if later you would discover something which you felt we could act on, please communicate with me again.
All right. I'm afraid I've just wasted your time.
No. Please don't think that. I only wish there's something we could do.
It's dreadful to feel so helpless.
Yes, I really am very sorry. Just a minute, Sir Clifford.
What is it?
It's just occurred to me that I could put you under someone who might be able to help you.
Who, Inspector?
Well, he's a personal friend of mine, as a matter of fact. Perhaps you may have heard of him. His name is Dr. Morell.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I'm Sir Clifford Forbes. I have an appointment with Dr. Morell.
Oh, yes, Sir Clifford. Inspector Hood rang up this morning about you, didn't he?
It's very good of Dr. Morell to see me at such short notice.
I know. If you'll come this way, please.
As Inspector Hood has pointed out to you, Sir Clifford, it would appear evident that your daughter's present condition is in some way connected with her visit to London.
Well, that seems to be the case, Dr. Morell.
Was she looking forward to the visit?
Very much. It was the first time she'd been on her own. In fact, my wife would prefer to have gone with her.
Why didn't she?
After all, Cynthia's no longer a child. Besides, she'd be in the company of Raymond, her fiancé.
Count Alvaro?
Yes.
She stayed at Christie's Hotel.
Yes, they know us. We always stay there whenever we come up to London.
Where is Count Alvaro now?
In Madrid. He's due to return to London any day.
Did he know of your daughter's illness?
No. They'd been writing to each other, and she received a letter the morning of her first attempt to gas herself.
Did you read that letter?
My wife did. She doesn't usually open her daughter's correspondence, of course. But in this case, we thought it might have something to do with what had happened.
But there was nothing?
No, it was the sort of letter one might expect. Very affectionate, a love letter. It's one of our worries. What is going to be Raymond's reaction to this dreadful business?
Doubtless that's worrying your daughter, too.
They're deeply in love with each other. He'll have to know, I suppose.
Well, if he's deeply in love with her, that shouldn't affect the situation.
I don't know. He's most sympathetic and understanding, but he comes from a very distinguished family. He may feel obliged to reconsider whether under these unhappy circumstances he should go through with the marriage.
Did your daughter discuss her visit on her return home?
Oh, hardly at all. That was what made us realize something was wrong.
How long did she stay in London?
She went away on the Friday and returned late Monday evening.
The object of the visit was to attend this big party with Count Alvaro?
That was to be on the Saturday night.
Uh-huh.
She was going to a theater with him as well and visiting some of his friends. He had to return to Spain on Monday morning early. That was why Cynthia came back by herself.
So far as you know, she was in his company most of the time when, of course, he would have looked after her.
We're pretty sure of that. He's most kind and thoughtful. He's about 10 years older than Cynthia, and I think that was why she fell in love with him, because he's so reliable.
It would appear that whatever it was upset your daughter and set in train these unhappy events transpired when she was alone.
I suppose so. Mm-hmm. We can't very well get in touch with him without giving away what's happened.
Where does he live when he's in London?
He's got a flat in Cavendish Street.
You would describe him as a man of wealth?
Oh, yes. His family are very rich. He travels a lot.
My secretary, Miss Frail, had better come in and take notes of everything you can remember relating to your daughter's stay in London.
Very well.
Any detail that you can recall may have some significance. I'll get Miss Frail now.
Oh, 5 o'clock and still matters to be done. Well, I've got all the notes, Dr. Morell.
Thank you, Miss Frail.
Clifford Forbes talked at length, but the only useful information we seem to have is the hotel where his daughter stayed.
That may well prove a source of information.
I hope so.
I also have this snapshot of the young woman and her husband-to-be.
Oh. She's very pretty. Though a little insipid, don't you think? He's attractive in that dark Spanish way. Shouldn't have thought she'd have been his type at all.
Does it necessarily follow that a certain type of man must be attracted to a certain type of woman, or vice versa?
Oh, yes, Doctor. It's all a matter of chemicals. Oh, but then surely you know that.
I've often wondered.
The chemicals that go to make up one individual's character and personality can have tremendous effect upon someone else's chemicals. Sometimes they act like a magnet, drawing each to each. Sometimes the reverse. They repel each other. At other times, the moment the opposite lot of chemicals meet and collide, there's a terrific explosion.
Which is precisely what will happen now, Miss Frail, unless you stop your interminable chatter.
Oh, I'm so sorry, Doctor. Was I going on? No, where were we? Are we going to see the daughter?
It may be necessary. First, however, inquiries at the hotel where she stayed might yield some results. Some member of the staff might have noticed something amiss.
Christie's Hotel... I'll ring up for you to see the manager.
Do that, Miss Frail. You come in?
Yes,
sir. You come in, dear. This is Lily, Dr. Morell, who looks after the floor where Miss Forbes had her bedroom. This is Dr. Morell and Miss Frail.
Good afternoon, sir. Good afternoon, Miss. Good afternoon, Miss.
I sent for you because Dr. Morell would like to ask you about the time when Miss Forbes was staying here. 2 weeks ago.
Oh, yes. Yes, Doctor, I remember it very well.
Miss Forbes had the same room she always had when she stayed here with Sir Clifford and Lady Forbes.
That's right, sir, she did.
We are an old established hotel, Dr. Morell, and some of our guests like to have the same accommodation they've had before. This was the first time that Miss Forbes has stayed here alone?
Yes, Doctor. In fact, we have one or two little jokes about it while she was here. That is, what were you going to say, Miss? It's this, Miss. I was remembering that it was only the first 2 nights that she was in a joking mood. Friday night and the Saturday night, when I saw her before she went out to the party. I saw her again next evening, and something seemed to have upset her.
Did you obtain any idea what was wrong?
I asked her, but she said it was nothing. She looked as if she hadn't slept a wink all night, poor thing. And she'd been so happy and full of life when she arrived, I felt ever so sorry.
Come in.
You sent for me, sir?
Yes, Henry. This is Dr. Morell and Miss Frail.
Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon,
madam.
Good afternoon.
Henry was the floor waiter, Dr. Morell, who served Miss Forbes. And you used to take breakfast to Miss Forbes in her room every morning?
That's right, sir.
Can you remember any incident about Miss Forbes which impressed you at the time?
Well, only that on Sunday morning she was in a very upset state and she had no breakfast at all.
Miss Forbes had appeared perfectly normal the previous morning?
Oh, definitely. Well, like she always was when she stayed with Sir Clifford and Lady Forbes. It was the same thing the next morning, Monday, the day she went away. All she had was a cup of tea, right off her food she was.
She offered no explanation for her sudden lack of appetite?
No, sir. I did ask her if there was anything wrong with the food or anything, but she said it wasn't that.
And she wouldn't say what it really was?
No, miss.
No, thank you, Henry. And will you tell Parks to come up?
Yes, sir.
Parks, the hotel porter, he might prove more talkative. It isn't how talkative... What they say that matters. Quite.
No, Parks won't be long.
It was about 12 o'clock. I was outside the hotel and I saw Miss Forbes come out. I asked her if she wanted a taxi. She shook her head and hurried across the street. I saw her stop and talk to a man in a doorway. He looked as if he'd been waiting for her.
Did you get a clear impression of him?
Oh, I'd know him again, if that's what you mean. He wasn't wearing a hat. And he'd got very fair hair. He was thick-set and middle-aged. I saw Miss Forbes give him something. It looked like a big envelope, and he gave her something in return. He walked away very quickly, though he had a bit of a limp. Miss Forbes hurried back across the street to the hotel. She was putting something in her handbag. It slipped to the pavement, and I saw it was a small envelope. I was going to pick it up for her, but she was too quick. She snatched it up and dashed past me. Later on, I got a taxi for her to take her to the station. She wasn't looking at all well, I thought, and, well, she barely spoke to me.
You have been most helpful.
Now, thank you, Parks.
Now, anything I can do to help, sir. Good afternoon, sir. Good afternoon, miss.
Good afternoon.
Well, that's about it, Dr. Morrell.
We're very grateful to you.
I can't think of anyone else in the hotel who could give you any more information. I was hoping someone might have seen Miss Forbes when she came back from the party.
Well, it might have been useful, especially if she'd been accompanied by someone whose description we could have obtained.
Miss Forbes must have come in when the night porter happened to be absent.
But surely it would have been her boyfriend, Count whatever his name is, who brought her back.
It may not have been. Well, I fear I've put you to a great deal of trouble.
Not a bit, Dr. Morrell. I do hope that this sad business will soon be cleared up.
Hello, this is Dr. Morrell's house. Oh, good evening, Sir Clifford. Well, the doctor's in the laboratory. Will you hold on, please? Dr. Morrell?
Miss Frail, just turn off that thing, would you?
Yes. Doctor?
Take that test tube and put it on the rack.
But doctor...
Don't drop it.
No, doctor.
I fancy I'm arriving somewhere in determining the difference between blood groups in relation to the criminal tendencies of the person involved.
Yes, I'm sure you are.
My belief that any emotional upheaval must give rise to certain glandular reactions, which in their turn might have an effect upon the blood, undoubtedly has some basis.
Doctor, Sir Clifford Forbes on the telephone.
And if this effect remains apparent in the blood for a length of time afterwards, the conclusion to be drawn... Sir Clifford Forbes? Why didn't you tell me instead of standing there gossiping?
Yes, Dr. Morrell.
I'll speak to you. Dr. Morrell here, Sir Clifford. When did you discover this? Yes, yes, just as soon as I have any news. Goodbye.
Well, what is it, Dr. Morrell? What's he found out?
On the morning before his daughter left to return home, she cashed a check at her London bank for £250.
£250? That's a lot of money.
Miss Forbes happened to be somewhat well off.
Oh, how lovely.
There appears to be no trace of the cash.
You mean it's all gone? Whatever on?
Murder.
What?
Murder of the soul, Miss Frail. Blackmail.
That's Dr. Morrell as sure as eggs.
It's what I suspected from the start.
You mean that was the blackmailer whom Miss Forbes met outside the hotel?
The hotel porter's description fits. The fair hair, the limp. That was all I needed. That'll be criminal records on the line, if you'll excuse me. Inspector Hood here. He's identified, has he? I was pretty sure. Send the dossier up.
Is it the man you think?
Yes, Miss Frail. Harry Fox. The last time I got him 4 years. He can't have been out more than 6 months.
Like most criminals, he continues to pursue the same nefarious trade, even though he knows that by so doing, he must inevitably encompass his own destruction.
Well, that's your theory, I know, Dr. Rill.
It is more than a theory, my dear Inspector. Here is demonstrable proof.
Oh, that poor girl. But how could she have got caught up with someone so horrible?
What is this man's mode of operation?
Oh, the old stuff. Works with an accomplice. Put some story over on his victim. I know Harry Fox, and I can just see in my mind how he'd work it in this case. It would be at the party this girl was at. He'd be a guest there. Oh, he'd wriggle his way in, trust him. He'd size up the situation, pick the right moment.
Miss Forbes?
Yes?
Sorry to barge in like this, but... Count Alvaro.
What is it? Has anything...
It's all right, Miss Forbes.
Something's happened.
He's been taken ill. It's nothing.
Raymond, where is he?
Really, it's nothing serious, but he's gone back to his flat.
He's not hurt.
Just a fainting attack, that's all. He sent me to ask if you could come along.
Oh, yes, yes, of course. Has he got a doctor?
One's on the way. I'm a friend, by the way. I'm staying with Raymond.
Let's hurry.
Yes, yes, I've got a taxi waiting. We are nearly there, Miss Forbes.
Poor Raymond. He seemed perfectly all right while we were dancing. Then he went to get a drink.
It was a sudden attack that hit him, but not to worry. I expect the doctor will be there now.
Oh, I do hope he's all right.
Here we are.
Thank you.
I'll just pay the driver. I've the key. Come on in, Miss Forbes. Come on in.
There you are, Dr. Morrell. That's about how it would go. He gets her into the flat,
dopes her drink or coffee, and when she wakes up, she finds she's been photographed, looking as if she's been on one of those wild parties, or in Harry Fox's amorous embrace.
Quite a vivid imagination of yours, Inspector.
I tell you, I know how Fox works.
Oh, absolutely sick.
The victim is to buy back the photographs. Take quite a time, because Mr. Fox naturally hangs on to the negatives.
Why was he such a fool as to pay up? That's what I can't understand. Well, I mean, if I was ever caught like that, well, not that I ever should be, of course.
Of course not.
I'm sure you would.
But if I ever was, I know what I'd do.
What?
This might be quite interesting, Miss Vale.
I'd beat the brute over the head with my umbrella, or whatever I could lay my hands on.
I believe you would, too.
Then I'd send for the police. Or for you, Dr. Morell.
You flatter me. You may rest assured that a blackmailer would never single you out for his attention.
Just let him try.
Now, the point is, you see, he invariably picks his victim very carefully. Someone he knows will react to the situation the way he wants. Who'll think of the scandal, the shame, exposure, and who panics. He's a real psychologist. Eh, Dr. Morell?
To a certain extent, he can weigh up the character of the person he proposes to enmesh in his toils. As in the case of this girl, he played upon her youthful inexperience, and in particular, upon the fact that she was engaged to be married. Her prospective husband would be horrified by what had befallen her.
Poor thing. What are we going to do, Dr. Morell?
Meet Mr. Fox.
Oh, I think that might be arranged. Come in.
The Harry Fox dossier, Inspector.
Oh, thanks. There you are, Dr. Morell. Have a glance at it.
There's also some stuff on a character he's worked with in the past, with the photos.
Right. Oh, by the way, Sergeant, I'd like to have a chat with dear Harry. Where's he hang out of an evening?
Harry Fox, Inspector. Oh, I think I know where you can pick him up. He's at the Grey Parrot Club every evening.
Do you think he'll be long, Inspector Hood?
Why, don't you like this joint?
It gives me the creeps.
Not to worry. Dr. Morell will join us any minute. You'll feel safe enough then.
Oh, I feel safe enough with you. Wonder why he left us on the way here from Scotland Yard.
To make a phone call, he said.
Well, he could have done that from your office.
Perhaps it's someone he doesn't want us to know about. A secret girlfriend, Miss Frail?
Inspector Hood, as if he'd... Oh, you were fooling, weren't you?
He's got some card up his sleeve, I shouldn't wonder.
Well, what happens when this fox creature does turn up?
Rather depends on what ideas Dr. Morell's got.
Hello, Grey Parrot Club. Farm here. Yeah, I know. Yeah, I'll
tell him
as soon as he comes in.
Hello. Well, I wonder who that phone call was for.
This is the sort of place where customers leave or collect messages.
Looked a bit sinister to me. Fox will never recognize you in this murky lighting.
That barman was on to me the moment I came in. They can smell a fatty a mile off.
Oh, yes, Dr. Morell.
Now, Miss Frail's been quite worried about you, Doctor.
Did you make your phone call all right?
You should know, Miss Frail.
What do you mean? As if I could read your mind. That tune. I do know who you phoned. But
you are improving, Miss Frail.
But I don't...
What is this going on? A mental telepathy act?
Miss Frail will now expound.
Don't you remember, Inspector? The phone call the barman took. That radio was playing Beautiful Dreamer. La, 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 la,
I've
la, la.
Got it. You were humming that, Dr. Morell, so you must have heard it when you phoned the barman.
How clever of you.
Oh, we plodding flatties get by now and again. But why did you phone, Dr. Morell? Did you...
What is it?
Fox, he's come in.
The fair hair and the limp. Yes, but he doesn't look at all horrible.
Well, if he did, he'd hardly get very far in his chosen trade.
No, I suppose not. But what do we do now?
Dr. Morell, it's for you to say.
The barman's speaking to him.
I think we might be getting along, Inspector.
Hey, but what about him?
I merely wanted to be sure he received the message. We can be waiting for him. Come along, Miss Frey.
I don't follow it at all.
Then just follow me.
I think we'd better, Inspector. Dr. Morell always knows where he's going.
Here we are, Dr. Morell.
Is this the address?
My message to Fox will bring him back here.
What now?
If your driver will proceed a little further along, we can await Fox's arrival.
All right, Sergeant. Stop here. Turn round on the other side of the road, between the street lamps.
Yes, Inspector.
We shouldn't have to wait long.
Maybe him. It's slowing up outside the house.
It's him, all right.
He's getting out of the taxi.
Let him go in.
What's on the clock, driver?
3 bob, sir.
All right.
Ah, thank you, sir.
Funny about that firm message. Wonder what's in the wind.
What do you want?
What do you mean? You phoned a message to me at the club.
Come in.
He's gone in, Doctor.
I think this is the moment for us to make a move.
Come on, Sergeant.
Here's Dr. Morell, matron.
Oh, how do you do, Doctor?
Good morning. This is Miss Thrale, my secretary.
Good morning, Miss Thrale.
The doctor has driven down from London for a few words with my daughter.
Yes, Doctor. Well, it will come this way. I'm afraid Miss Forbes hasn't had a very good night, but she's a bit more relaxed now.
Miss Thrale and I will wait here.
Morell,
he's come to see you. So long as he doesn't ask me any questions. I can't tell him anything.
Well, I'll leave you, Doctor.
If you would. Miss Forbes?
Yes, Doctor?
I have something for you. I fancy it might interest you.
What is it?
You ought to show some curiosity towards it. It's cost you a considerable amount of money and might have cost you more.
What do you mean?
It's the negative of a photograph.
Oh, you know.
You've suffered an unhappy experience, for which you have nothing to reproach yourself.
How did you discover it?
I had a conversation with a fair-haired individual who was responsible for trapping you into going to his accomplice's flat, where you expected Count Alvaro was awaiting you.
Yes. Yes, that's how it's happened. Yes. He was called away suddenly during the party. Then this man arrived, and he said I was to go with him to the flat where Raymond had taken ill. He said he was a friend of his. I believed him. And then there was the coffee he gave me. And I don't remember anything until I woke up and found myself there. It was horrible. Horrible. And then the photograph...
You may dismiss it all. It's finished. Just relax. Relax.
It's been like some dreadful nightmare.
Try to think of it in a way. A nightmare. Now you're awake and it's done with. Now you can sleep again, feeling secure and safe.
I can't believe it's over.
Relax and sleep once more. No one can harm you. No one. Relax. Relax.
How is she, Dr. Morell?
How did she take it?
I left her sleeping.
Oh, how can we ever thank you? If it hadn't been for you, I don't know what we should have done.
You may rest assured that there is no cause for any further anxiety.
I told you, Dr. Morell, we'll put everything right.
There remains one minor matter to be attended to, which I didn't mention to her.
What's that?
Well, I thought it best to leave it to you to discuss with your daughter. It concerns Count Raymond Alvaro.
You mean he knows?
I fear so.
But why? Why did you have to tell him? How did you get in touch with him?
Don't you think your daughter would have wanted him to know anyway?
Well, she couldn't not tell him, sure.
No. Only I must confess I was hoping he'd never have to know.
Why should it matter if he really loved her?
Yes. Yes, but... But you see, you've spoken to him, Dr. Morell.
I have.
But where is he? Is he back in London?
He's in London, and he knows everything.
What did he say? How did he react?
That's what you will have to explain to your daughter.
You mean
he was never in love with her. It was her money which attracted him.
How dare you say that?
Well, because it happens to be true. You see, he makes a practice of attaching himself to impressionable young women of means and with access to wealth. Count Raymond Alvaro, or whatever he calls himself, found such a victim in your daughter.
But it can't be true. How do you know this?
I had the dubious pleasure of seeing his picture in a dossier at Scotland Yard. It was the same man in the snapshot you gave me with your daughter.
You never mentioned anything about that to me.
Didn't I, Miss Frayle?
The man with her in the snapshot. Yes, I remember now.
You observed he looked attractive in a dark Spanish way.
And he hasn't been back to Spain at all?
A discreet inquiry I made at his flat in Cavendish Street revealed that he was, in fact, there.
But the letters he wrote?
They were easily arranged. Inspector Hood and I called at his flat last night.
I was there too, wasn't I, Dr. Morell?
Accompanied inevitably by Miss Frayle. We apprehended him and his accomplice, a man named Fox. The ensuing interview proved eminently satisfactory for us.
I just can't believe it.
I knew it. It must be an awful shock.
You mean he isn't Count Raymond Alvaro at all?
One of many aliases he uses. His real name doesn't matter. All that need concern you is that he is a professional blackmailer.
That was another adventure in a BBC series featuring Ernest Dudley's famous character, Dr. Moreau, and, of course, his secretary, Miss Fred. The artists taking part were Dr. Morell, Cecil Parker, Miss Frail, Sheila Sim, Inspector Hood, Philip Ray, Sir Clifford Forbes, Douglas Young, Lady Forbes, Madeline Christie, Cynthia Forbes, Ruth Prancer, Hotel Waiter, Hayden Jones, Hotel Manager, Humphrey Morton, Lily, the maid, Beryl Calder, Matron, Molly Rankin, Harry Fox, and other parts, Ian Sadler. This recorded program was produced by Leslie Bridgemont.
That's Case Closed for this week. There's more from Matthew Slade, Dr. Morell, and Case Closed as soon as everything's back up and running normally. You can also find our Shoutcast stream at relicradio.com and a donate button. If you'd like to help support this and all of the shows, even though most of them you can't listen to right now, thanks to those who have helped out. Thanks for joining me this week. I'll be back again next Wednesday with another hour of Case Closed.